Folks, it's Freaky Friday. That's right. We've made it to the end of another work week, and knock on wood, it has been a quiet one around Ohio State. So that means that the Podcast Daily needs you, the subtext audience, to help us get through this show. And we did that with a mailbag. He is Jeremy Birmingham. I am Austin Ward. What a week it's been, Berm.
Has it been a week?
I don't know.
It's been eerily quiet. Generally speaking, that precludes something terrible happening for the weekend. So we'll see. I'm hoping that's not the case. I got a lot of stuff to do around the house to prepare for a graduation party in a few weeks. And beyond that, I have to go to Canton for the Under Armour camp. And that'll be pretty much all day Sunday. And Bill's in Los Angeles. And so if anything terrible happens, you're on your own.
Well, if that happens on Sunday morning or Saturday night, that could also be problematic. So I'll knock on wood a second time, because we got 1, 2, 15, 20 questions about if the start of the transfer portal window being so quiet for Ohio State means that it's going to be a disaster in the last 48 hours of it.
So is that where we're starting? I do think it's interesting. I mean, if you look at it as we record this on late Thursday afternoon before the NFL draft, I think it's important to be upfront with people about this, because they're probably expecting some high level analysis of where Marvin Harrison Jr. was selected. Oh. And we're recording this before he gets selected. So I don't want people to be thinking, let me just save you there. I think the Arizona Cardinals are a great spot for Marvin Harrison Jr. 3, 2, 1. I think the San Diego Chargers are a great spot for Marvin Harrison Jr. 3, 2, 1. I think the Los Angeles Raiders are a great spot for Marvin Harrison Jr. Is there anybody else we missed?
How many team names? That's two locations out of three that you got wrong for NFL teams.
3, 2, 1.
Okay, well, they got the bit.
I think the St. Louis Rams are a perfect spot for Marvin Harrison Jr.
Crushed it.
Whatever fits your need there, people, just clip it and you're good. No, but
probably none of those.
Yeah, probably. Well, maybe you look at Michigan has lost what, three guys to the transfer portal in the last, I think, 16 hours. DJ Waller, a cornerback, Jeremiah Beasley, a true freshman linebacker, like a class of 2024 linebacker, who is an early enrollee, and Amir Herring, an offensive line depth piece. So like things can happen here. The reality is Ohio State, I think, because they are very well positioned in the NIL game right now, I think they've kind of figured that out. They are not as easily picked off as perhaps Michigan is when they're trying to sort out their NIL stuff. And I think that there's probably some, there's tampering going on everywhere. So if you are not really having your ducks in a row, then you are in a position where you can get sniped. And Ohio State has a pretty good handle on that right now. And so I think that they are more insulated than others, but it doesn't mean that we still couldn't see movement between now and what is it, Sunday?
Yeah. And we talked about that at the start of the week, that a lot of these circumstances tend to play out where guys already have their mind made up that they are intending to leave. They have already talked to some schools. They have reverse tampered themselves to deal with coaches or collectives to find out where they could go and what might be a good fit for them. There hasn't been nearly as much of that as we would have anticipated. And we've talked about several different reasons that may be. Again, things could change in the last 48 hours when you have a deadline and you have to make one decision. Who knows what's going to influence that at the end, but it does seem like the positive motivation to stay at Ohio State is largely winning out here. So could something happen with one or two or three players still over the next couple of days? Yeah, I mean, definitely would not rule that out, but it doesn't feel like there's going to be anything that would dramatically change Ohio State's roster.
Exactly. And at the risk of like putting ourselves on the chopping block, if there is any movement between here and Sunday night or Monday, which I think it's actually Monday is the final day of the portal opening, it would be shocking, not if there was attrition, but if it was attrition that was actually being counted on for the 2024 season. That would be shocking.
Right. All right. So we got that from a ton of folks. Do you want to continue with a football question, Berm, or a non-football question?
Hey, man, whatever. Three, two, one. I think the Cincinnati Bengals are a great landing spot for Marvin Harrison Jr.
Go ahead. Yes. All right. So you don't want to keep the other gag going about when we record, but you're going to play this one all 32 teams or 40 teams for wherever they have moved to?
Just for today. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I love it. That's a great idea.
Except for Pittsburgh and Baltimore and Cleveland. I refuse to engage in that sort of tomfoolery.
Yeah, that can't happen. All right. This is actually staying in the portal. A departure for Ohio State. I thought it was an interesting question. Douglas asked it. Do you think Ohio State botched Dallin Hayden by prioritizing Chip Traynham and Mayan Williams last year, or was this inevitable? And then the second part of this, I think, where it gets more intriguing, which is, do we as fans overvalue some players? Dallin felt more impactful than landing at Colorado.
I think the answer to both of those questions is yes.
Ooh, okay.
I definitely think, I mean, number one, he's landing at Colorado, but since he committed to Colorado, they've had two running backs decide they're transferring out. So clearly the intent is to go there and be RB1, which is he was not going to be at Ohio State. So, you know, it's similar, I think, in the Kyle McCord conversation in some ways. Like, when you're the starting quarterback at Ohio State and you go 11-1 and you have the Buckeyes within 40 yards of beating Michigan at home, to have a real shot to be the number one team in the playoff and probably a national champion. And then that quarterback leaves and he ends up going to Syracuse. I think people are like, whoa, that's, you would have figured that guy would go to a bigger spot. But Dallin Hayden specifically, I mean, the scenario that he's looking for is probably an opportunity to be a one and done type of cat. And he can do that right now by going to Colorado and getting 300 carries and being in a very dynamic offense. It's going to allow him to catch the ball out of the backfield. It's going to allow him to get a lot of carries. He's not going to be tasked with a lot of pass blocking, which is not something he does particularly well. But I do think that fans at times overvalue players that have outsized results in undersized moments. And Dallin Hayden, I think specifically because we saw him win a game for Ohio State his freshman year, like straight up won the Maryland game. And I know that then moves him up a notch in people's minds. Like, hey, this guy can win us games, so he needs to play. But I don't pretend to know more than Tony Alford or Ryan Day. And if they thought the Chip Traynham was a more valuable piece of the offense a year ago, then I'm not going to question it that loudly, because Chip's versatility and everything he did well, the little things he did well, was extremely important to the offense. I feel bad for Chip because I think Kentucky's going to land Penny Boone from Toledo / Louisville. And so now he's going to be put in a position where all of a sudden his new role is going to be, you know, mitigated. So it's just the way the portal works. But I don't know. We talked at length last year about how stupid it was that Ohio State was redshirting Dallin Hayden in the 2023 season. So I can't sit here and say that the coaches, that I think they handled it right, because I think they handled it wrong.
Yeah, if he's not capable or willing or ready to do however they want to describe it, to handle some of the pass protection stuff, or if a year before it was questions about ball security and practice, like, I understand not playing him. They had better options than Dallin Hayden. Now, could they have gotten more out of it by specializing a role for him? Yeah, I think they could have. I do think it's telling. You mentioned like playing in a really exciting offense at Colorado. Like, do we know that that's what it's going to be like? They still haven't. They have no discernible long-term strategy under Deion Sanders in terms of roster management. They have not, by all accounts, fixed what was one of the worst Power 5 offensive lines in the country. The entire blueprint seems to be to highlight Shedeur Sanders, so that Deion can turn him into an NFL draft pick and then probably leave after next year. So I hope for Dallin Hayden that he gets the things that he wants and he gets featured and he gets a bunch of carries, but I doubt that he will. I thought it was a very strange move. I understood why Dallin Hayden left. I don't really understand how Colorado became the most appealing destination for him. I don't think it's going to work.
I don't disagree that there are some question marks, but I know he's going to get a lot of, if it's not Shedeur, it's probably going to be him. They got a couple, you know, talented wide receivers there, but they seemingly have a plan for him. Deion has had plans, it seemed like, for a lot of guys that haven't panned out yet. So we'll see if it does for Dallin. But I think, to go to the second part of this question, which is, do fans put an outsized importance on players? I do think that happens. And I also think it's hilarious because when Dallin was being recruited in the class of 2022 as the lone running back Ohio State signed in that class, people were bothered by his national ranking and didn't think he was good enough to play at Ohio State. And I just think it's funny how quickly things can change.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask for examples of players that we have heard a lot about from the fan base who we know have been overvalued by the fan base, but that's not that we don't need to throw any stones.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious. I mean, there's players that are fan favorites that
DeMario McCall.
Oh, we don't need to say names.
Oh, sorry.
You know, but sir, that's an example of one. And there certainly have been others, but that's life, man.
Okay.
The backup running back, the backup quarterback, those are always the most popular guys on the team.
That's true. My apologies to DeMario. He was a very entertaining personality. This is
my apologies to the Hilltoppers.
We had a debate about this a couple weeks ago, and I'm not sure that we've ever solved it or that we will solve it. You had an interesting answer, and I wonder if your mind has changed. And this came from Ryan Beadle, who wanted to know who we think would be the most irreplaceable player on the offense and the defense this year as far as getting the most out of that side of the ball.
Josh Simmons, I think, is the most irreplaceable player on the offense right now, considering where we are in the portal window, considering where we are in the development of the roster. I don't think you could replace him. I think at quarterback, if it's not Will Howard, I think Devin Brown can do it. If it's not Devin Brown, I think Will Howard can do it. If at running back, you've got Chip, you've got Trey, you've got Quinshon, you've got running backs and freshmen that I think are really good. And maybe you don't want to press freshmen into action, but if you were forced to, I think they could handle it. Pick a wide receiver. I think that there's other guys on the roster who are capable of complementing or giving you some of what they give you. I don't think that's the case with Josh Simmons, so I think he's the player on offense for me. Hmm.
That's a good one. I don't disagree. I think you're right. You made a compelling case there. You can even go further. Like, I think at quarterback, if they got past the top two, that they would still be okay with Lincoln Keenholz and much better position to thrive than they were in the Cotton Bowl. And arguably the same thing is true at running back beyond Trevion and Quinshon with James Peoples and Sam Williams-Dixon at this point. So I think you're correct about that. If there is somebody else, I think by the end of spring, it became clear that Will Kaczmarek was building enough momentum as the all-around do-it-all tight end and starting to get more comfortable competing against Ohio State caliber, which, again, not an easy thing to do, to go from playing at Ohio and against a MAC schedule and competing against other like MAC level guys in practice every single day to jumping in January and then going through March and April against the best defense in America. That nobody is going to be totally comfortable doing that, no matter how confident Will Kaczmarek was in his own abilities. I think by the second half of spring, he was showing the stuff on the practice field that Ohio State and Keenan Bailey and Ryan Day had seen on tape that made them want to bring him in to replace Cade Stover. So I do still have questions about the overall depth at tight end. And if you remove Will Kaczmarek from that conversation, I think that might be problematic for Ohio State on offense.
I'm going to only fight back on it because I think with the rest of the pieces you have on offense, if you had to just scrap the tight end.
I get it. Yeah. For sure.
Well, if I'm picking a second guy, it's probably Emeka Ebuka because of his versatility, the inside outside, the ability to help in the running game, the ability to help in the return game, the ability, the veteran presence he has in a room full of very young guys. So if I'm picking a second guy on offense, it's Emeka Ebuka. On defense, it has to be Caleb Downs because he is the best safety in the country. And you got him when you didn't really expect to. And I think you could potentially argue against myself to say, well, you didn't even know you were going to have him 3 months ago. But now that he's there, like, there's no way you can replace him. So
you are arguing against yourself because the last time we answered this question, you said it was Lathan.
I know, but I've changed my mind. The more you see Caleb, the more you hear about Caleb, the more you see what he allows the rest of the defense to do, including Lathan Ransom. I think we will see the best version of Lathan Ransom because of Caleb Downs. And yep. I think that he's impossible to replace.
Yeah, the question was specific to getting the most out of Ohio State's offense and defense. And Caleb Downs has changed the entire configuration in some ways of Ohio State's silver bullets there by allowing Sonny Styles to go to linebacker and what that could mean for CJ Hicks and the defensive front and the five man, like all these other things that we saw throughout spring. Like they probably would not exist if Caleb Downs was not on this roster. He is the clear answer. And I think that the runner up is Jack Sawyer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you could argue Jack or JT, I think, just because they're very similar. But Jack, I think I have like slightly ahead of JT as a pass rusher right now. And that's something that this defense is going to need to be its maximum version. So I would agree that's probably Jack number two.
Yeah, I think that the Jack that we saw for the last 5-6 weeks of the season last year that's fun to project what that could look like for him in this bonus year that he came back for. Nathan Jackson would like to know, Berm, if the Patriots called Ryan Day right now and offered him the head coaching job, would he take it?
No. Yeah, I don't think so.
I kind of think that he would take it, but I don't think that like the NFL interest, maybe both ways, but I know from the NFL side, any worst case scenarios that Ryan Day could leave for the NFL have been overblown because the NFL is not enamored with the idea of Ryan Day as the head coach of an NFL team. Like I don't say that to throw any shade at Ryan Day. I'm not doing that at all. There are only 32 of those positions in the entire world, and college head coaches have largely proven to be ineffective at making that jump to the next level. So when we've heard about this in the last couple of years, and there were off seasons where Ryan Day was fielding calls in some level of interest, but not to the level that like an actual job offer was on the table. I don't think that the NFL has interest in Ryan Day beyond being an offensive coordinator. So again, that's not the question that I was asked here. We were asked, it was if he was offered the job, would he take it? And I think since there are so few of those, and because of the growing headache of working in college athletics writ large, I think if that job offer did come back to him again, he would probably have to take it.
Yeah, I totally agree if the question was framed in like 9 months from now. I just think that what we know about Ryan Day as a competitor, as a person who wants to prove people wrong, who is extremely proud, and like this season means everything to him. And I don't think he would walk away from this team right now knowing everything that's at stake for his legacy and his reputation and the Patriots stink.
I guess if we're talking literally April 26th, which is today, Freaky Friday, then no, he wouldn't be taking it at this very moment.
Yeah, and that's how I'm viewing it. I mean, if it's after this season and the Buckeyes win a national championship, all bets are off. Any conversation, any door could be open. But I think that for a guy that is, I don't want to use this word because it'll come across probably too strong, but I can't think of another one right now. Like, he is desperate to validate himself on the national scene in college football, and I just don't think he would do it right now.
See, I'm trying to think about it from the perspective of if it had happened in December or early January when Bill Belichick did leave the Patriots. Like, if that job offer had been plopped on his desk and to not have to deal with these headaches, I do. We've talked about his competitive mindset and singular focus and drive for years. That often it doesn't always come across in public, but how maniacal he really is behind the scenes, although much more balanced than maybe his predecessor was. I think if that had happened, I'm viewing it from December or January. If he had been a legitimate NFL head coaching candidate, I'm more inclined to believe that he would have seriously considered it and perhaps accepted it than I would have in previous off seasons.
Yeah, I mean, if it happened 3-4 months ago, I think the conversation's different. I also believe and have stated as such publicly and on Twitter or whatever in the past, like, there are going to be a number of high level college coaches who just do not want to put up with this crap anymore and decide to move on prematurely from their positions that they're in. Hopefully that's not the case for Ryan Day. I know that, you know, the goal for him and his family has been to get his kids through high school in Columbus, Ohio, and then see what happens. So that's still a ways away. So hopefully the Patriots don't make that call anytime soon.
Well, seems pretty unlikely that
this weekend, because no one's going to be around.
That's right. We've got too much to do this weekend. Keep it quiet. Definitely don't do that right now.
3, 2, 1. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. would be an excellent fit for the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm not sure how the Chiefs pulled it off, but somehow they made move and moved all the way up into the top 10. And kudos to them for making it happen. I still can't believe they traded Patrick Mahomes to the Vikings, but you got to do what you got to do.
That was the only way they could get Marv, and I think you have to respect it. They've gotten the most out of Patrick Mahomes that they possibly could.
Yeah.
So good luck to the Vikings. Ty Nab, random debate question. I don't know that this is going to be as difficult as he thought it was going to be, but he wants to know, would it be harder for me to give up wrestling or for you to give up beer? And I can tell you, Tyler, I believe it was. Sorry. Did I get that right? Ty. I've already seen Berm give up beer for extended periods of time. Like, yeah, he could do that quite easily.
Yeah. Giving up beer is easy.
Yeah. And if I had to give up professional wrestling, I would. The question is, would I give up professional wrestling or beer? In which case, so long, WWE. We're done.
Yeah. You like beer more than I like beer.
I sure do. I wonder how that came to be. I'm going to have to follow up with Ty why, like, I've had to basically force you to get into the beer scene at the same level that I have been since we started working together. You famously didn't even know how to order a flight of beer.
Doesn't matter now. I think that if I have to choose between a really good bourbon, a really good red wine, and a really good beer, beer is third on my list.
Really?
Yeah.
I rarely see you order like really good wine. You and the missus like to slap the bag.
Yeah, I like a box wine is better in most cases to me than just. When we are out for football related events, we're not in places where it's like a wine scene where you sit down and drink a glass of wine. Like, it's not often that we find ourselves in those scenarios.
That's true.
Three, two, one. I really think it's a great fit for Marvin Harrison. He's back home in Indianapolis where his father had a legacy, and the Colts combining him with Anthony Richardson gives them two of the brightest, youngest stars in the league on offense.
I just wonder how he's going to, you know, handle that pressure, seeing his dad's name in the Ring of Honor every single Sunday. That's almost too much to ask for. But anyway, that's now the situation that he may or may not face.
Yeah.
Evan wants to know, all right, we're going to have to tweak the question. Evan asked what the best stadium food is in the Big Ten, and that might be the only actual stadium food that I've eaten. I've gone down there to get the crab dip pretzel, which is a feast for sure. And you need multiple people, even sports writers, to take that down. But is it best press box food or best places to eat on campus? We could answer that better, but we are blessed, although not you always, because photographers don't always get the same luxury treatment, right? Yeah, people, describe what that means, Berm. I get to sit up in the press box. I'm protected by the elements, and that's generally where the food spread is, but some photo bunkers give you nothing.
Yeah, most of the time we're in closets. and then forced to go out into the elements and then get stuffed back into the closet. So it's not good. If the best like photo workroom in the Big Ten is Michigan State, because it's directly linked to their media room. And so there's actual food in there, which is awesome for us. That no other place in the Big Ten outside of Rutgers, which is an easy place to get up to the press box where they generally have good press box food. It's not easy to get from the field to the press box and back in time to actually do the work that needs to be done, like at halftime. And I never get to do it before the game. And by the time we're done working after the game, everyone's food is gone. Like, Rutgers has good press box food, but they also have like a portable trailer essentially that they set up for the media work, for the photo workroom. And at least they have like a cooler with Powerades and waters and Coke Zeroes. So like, that to me is all I could ever ask for. Ohio Stadium, like, it's, we just have a, a, a carved out space underneath the south stands and where we don't generally have water in there.
Is your home base, the Horseshoe, is it the worst photo setup in the Big Ten?
Purdue is probably worse. Indiana's great. Indiana's got a great setup. Purdue is probably the worst.
I thought you at least had a designated room.
Purdue was a lot better last year than it was the year before. So let me correct myself. Than the previous trip. 2018 Purdue was like a supply closet right next to the bleachers where Dan Harker from, I think he shoots now for Bucknuts 247. Like he had like $30,000 worth of equipment stolen in 2018 from Purdue. That one was awful. They've got better.
They had food. They had food down there too last year. I remember.
Yeah, they did a nice job. They upgraded significantly. Penn State stinks. Michigan.
Penn State's worse for media all around.
Yeah, Penn State is just a very small room. And it's always a big game and there's always like way more people in there than there are for their other games. And like Penn State, Rutgers, that room is fine, but Penn State, Ohio State, it is three sizes too small. Michigan stinks.
A Grinch heart.
Yeah. It's not great, honestly. It is. We are certainly like the forgotten part of the media contingent. Sort of the redheaded stepchildren of the media contingent.
It's so weird that that's the case because the Ohio State takes great pride in sports information and communication and hosts so many big games, and the press box is like immaculate compared to most places in college football. There's more than enough room. There's hundreds of spots for credentialed media for, you know, the biggest games, the Michigan games, the Penn State games, Notre Dame, whoever, the biggest one on the calendar every year, like that gets every national media seat filled. And then you go down there and before every game, I have to bring you down four bottles of water because otherwise you would die.
Well, last year we at least got the advantage of adding a second porta potty into our
room. Oh, luxurious.
It's really simple. All they have to do is put up some garage doors on the sides and just fabricate some living arrangements in there. It'd be pretty easy. You could still ride the coaches through on the cart. You could still do all the stuff you have, but you could make it more presentable and maybe, you know, get us out of the elements. When it's 30 degrees at Ohio State, it's 30 degrees in there. So
it's not
great.
Sometimes it gets a little too hot in the press box. Like that's
sounds awful.
Yeah. And then like for a big noon kickoff, you know, the sun comes through the glass and I get like, it's like a magnifying glass in an ant. It's just the worst, man. You can't even relate. All right.
I'm glad we don't have to experience that.
Yes. Don't
we just have to worry about people's beers that they spill from the south stands, falling through the concrete and into the room where we're working and having it just drip on our computers. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I love my job though. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything except for warmth.
Chase Hines would like you to answer this question right now, Berm. If you had to say yes or no, will the 2025 Ohio State recruiting class be the best of the Ryan Day era?
Yes, I think it will.
Got it. That's all he said yes or no, and you answered it.
Yeah.
Cam Tice.
Two, one. The Washington Commanders shocked everyone by adding Marvin Harrison Jr. over a quarterback like Jaden Daniels. And honestly, when you couple him with Terry McLaurin, I think you might have one of the most dynamic 1-2 duos in the entire NFL at wide receiver. So congratulations to Marvin Harrison. It's unfortunate you have to play for that dumpster fire of a franchise, but being the number 2 pick doesn't suck.
Congrats. Cam Tice wanted to follow up on that. He had one for each of us. This was recruiting specific for that class of 2025 as it's coming into shape. There's a few positions that are more murky than others, specifically the offensive line and interior defensive line. Who are the Bucs keying in on for those positions?
I mean, obviously, offensive line, it's weird. They have Carter Lowe committed. He's a, you know, 5-star prospect at tackle. David Sanders, the number 1 ranked offensive lineman in the country. They firmly believe that they are a real contender for. Unfortunately for Ohio State, the main guy they've been really recruiting at guard is Avery Gatch from Michigan. He's going to commit to the Wolverines a week from today. And then you start to go down the list at the offensive guard spot. Javon McFadden and Joshua Blackston, both from Maryland, are very high on the list. It's going to be an interesting couple of weeks ahead for Justin Fry, because he's got to figure out, with Gatch presumably off the board to Michigan, where he turns and how you start reprioritizing. Ohio State's only offered 23 offensive linemen in the class of 2025, which is significantly lower than most of their peers. Georgia, for example, has offered 44. Alabama's like 41. Michigan's 41, I think. So they're going to need to get more active in that spot. Defensive tackle, defensive line is also interesting in that I don't think Ohio State really needs to go crazy at defensive tackle, but you're going to need one or two for sure. I think that the names to really pay attention to are Cole Breeler out of New Jersey, Darian Smith out of Maryland is someone who does not get talked about much. He's a teammate of Blake Woodby, Ohio State's 2025 cornerback commit. And those guys are the two that I'm really watching closest right now, but there's going to be a lot of potential options out there.
All right. And Cam followed up by wanting to know, he's a Columbus native moving back to town after living in Cincinnati for the last 9 years. What are some of the best local spots for food? Any cuisine? His wife and him love them all.
Yeah, that's a you question.
Yeah, I would say if you're looking for any cuisine, the best place, bar none, to find any cuisine that you want, any from anywhere in the world, is Bethel Road, where I live. And I'm not just saying that because it's nearby. I can't remember if it was like Columbus Monthly or whoever. They did a full issue that was like, here are all the places that you can eat on Bethel Road. It is the best melting pot in all of Columbus. And so if you just pick any spot on that road, you're going to find anything you want. Now, I prefer to go get my pizza, which I think the best pizza in Columbus is at Gallo's, which is on Bethel Road. There's good, multiple good chicken spots. If you want a hero, you go down to Panini Opa down there on the corner of Sawmill and Bethel. If you're looking for craft beer, great, because we have that too now with Sip, where I can also be found occasionally, once or twice a month or week.
I like their pizza. They got good pizza.
So I know that that sounds like a cop-out. I don't mean it as one. Like, you can find whatever you're looking for. You just fire in Bethel Road. You say, oh, well, this is where I'd like to. Oh, there's some good Japanese barbecue right here. Let's go to that. There's, you know, like a Cajun hot pot. You can find that. Like, you've got it all on Bethel Road. So come to Northwest Columbus.
There too.
And there's a Sheetz where you can go get your MTO order and you're all set and grab a zero. Or, Berm, have you tried the new DDP zero flavor?
The coconut one or whatever?
Creamy coconut.
I haven't. My brother asked me about that the other day. I'm not a huge coconut guy, but I'm willing to give it a shot. I don't really love coconut.
Well, you've got to try it.
It's I'm not about coconuts. 3, 2, 1. I was surprised. I thought the Giants would take a quarterback in that early part of the draft, but Marvin Harrison Jr. is just too good to pass up. And he's going to have to play in New York, which is going to be interesting for a player like Marvin, who's not really someone in love with the media scene, and New York can be overbearing, but he's been a professional since the day he was born, and I think he'll do fine in New York.
Big Apple. Drive that Maserati is going to be tough. You have to put that away for a little bit. Steve Ross wanted to know if sports card collecting and trading and online betting are a college football season only or year round. For me, that is a way of life. That is year round. That's a simple answer. And I'm really glad that now the release schedule means that there's something to collect all year. But I am very disappointed, incredibly disappointed, that player prop bets have been removed in the state of Ohio. I don't understand it, and I know that we have to start a campaign to bring it back.
I actually do understand it, and I think it's fine. Those two things are probably more seasonal for me than for you and Philly Billy. I have not placed a wager since the Super Bowl, I don't think. So I don't really like to bet on things I don't understand. And I'm not sure how many dollars I can truly make by just betting on Max Verstappen and Scottie Scheffler every week. Though I think it's probably turning out to be a good plan if I can really convince myself to lean into it. But I like to bet on football because I pay attention to football.
I mean, you got baseball every day. You're back into the Reds.
Yeah, but I don't want to bet on baseball. I don't even understand it. It's like the hockey money lines and stuff, the puck lines. Like, it's all weird. I don't want it. I don't like it. I don't like it.
Speaking of sports card collecting, if you want to hang out with Bill and I on May 4th, we will be at our friends and Bob partner Card Collector 2. He has a trade night from 5 to 10. There will be free food. Lots of trading, giveaways, all that sorts of stuff. We don't miss an opportunity out there. Hopefully the weather's great. If not, he's always got tents out there, but that's on May 4th. So put that on your calendar. Come hang out with us, Bill, and I will be side by side with a bunch of cards to trade and sell if you want to. And we will wrap it up with this. Shannon Slattery had the most in-depth question of the week. And Berm, he would like to know who would win in a four-way steel cage match between you, Bill, me, and Doug. All weapons are available. Steel chairs, barbed wire tables. At first glance, you may say Bill in a landslide, but what if Berm, myself, or Doug team up Hunger Games style to take out Bill first? Who gets a hold of the first weapon available? Also, who would be our choice of a celebrity guest referee? The odds he also posted as Bill minus 250, me plus 110, Berm plus 300, and Doug plus 1,000, because the recent eye stuff would make this hard for him, but also an eye patch would be a nice wrestling look. So, kudos to the best question of the week.
Yeah, I mean, Doug is the oldest, and obviously the eye issues are something that would affect his ability peripherally in the ring. Like, it's important to be able to see side to side in that sort of chaos. I think we would probably agree that we would need to take Bill out.
Without question.
And from there, I like my chances, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I'm bigger than you and Doug. And
But I have access to weapons, and I've watched thousands of hours of TLC matches.
You're shifty, I get it. I think that it may surprise people to know that I am somewhat athletic, despite the fact that I don't particularly look it as I'm approaching 46 years old. But I think that once Bill's out, it's a pick 'em, in my opinion, because I think Doug's the craziest. Yeah. And I wouldn't want to sneak. I wouldn't put anything past him, like as far as like acid out of the mouth or something really, really bizarre, you know?
Okay. A little Oscar style mist.
Yeah, whatever the hell that means. I think that taking Bill out is priority one, and then it's all
how should we do that? What would be the most effective weapon to take out Bill?
Well, we'd need to have somebody sneak around behind him, get on all fours, and then someone else push him. We got to get him off his feet.
Well, that's not gonna work.
Why? If two people push him,
he's too smart for that.
No, you can't pay that close attention. There's too much happening. I think that's the way to go. We got to get him off his feet. That's the thing. If he's upright, we're down bad. You know what I mean? So, so that to me is priority one. And after that, I mean, I think it's probably a pretty good fight till everyone's dead in the center of the ring. I don't know that anyone wins, to be honest. Mutually assured destruction is the way to go.
That's more likely than not. I'm not sure anybody emerges from that, but we have to get out the kendo sticks and a fire extinguisher to take Bill down. I don't think we can just sneak up with like a schoolyard prank and like push him over. Doug's on all fours. Bill's gonna be like, "What are you doing, Doug? Stand up!" Like he's too smart for it.
What? If we were, you know, converging on him and triangulating, he may have no choice but to turn the attention one way and not be fully alert to Douglas sneaking behind him for the old oopsie daisy.
All I know is we'd be in
one. I can't believe Marvin Harrison lasted until pick 9, but for the Bears to land Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison in this draft, it couldn't have gone better for GM Ryan Poles. This is what they dreamt of all along. And kudos to them for pulling it off. I mean, I can't imagine why these other teams let him slide, but here he is in Chicago, and that's what the Bears wanted all along.
Do you want to do a second one for the Bears where he goes number one overall?
No, that's not going to happen.
Okay, good. Well, hope everybody enjoyed the draft on Thursday night. What an experience it was, seeing all that wheeling and dealing and just Marvin Harrison Jr. seeing his dream coming true in X City. Thanks for joining us on a Freaky Friday mailbag edition of the Podcast Daily. Berm's going to keep bringing this gag back. We're going to have it on Monday. We'll record something in advance, and he'll just do that for every single Ohio State player that got drafted. So stay tuned for that, and definitely you won't get tired of it. I promise you. He is Berm. I am Austin. We hope you have a fantastic weekend. We'll see you on Monday.